D-backs set to wrap up this homestand with the series finale against Baltimore this afternoon as they try to come back and win this series from the Orioles. Welcome to the Early BP. I'm Mike Farron. Last night, a rough night for the D-backs. Merrill Kelly allowed three homers, including a three-run homer to Dwight Smith Jr. in the third as the D-backs fell to Baltimore 7-2. D-backs back to 500 on the year and just about ready to start a six-game road trip to Miami and New York, where they play two against the hard-hitting New York Yankees. In a minute, we'll talk to Torrey Lovello about today's game. Visit with the D-backs manager. And up next, we are getting close to the trade deadline. The trade deadline is 1 o'clock Arizona time on Wednesday afternoon. So it should be just about the time the D-backs are wrapping up their game against the Yankees on Wednesday. And there is a lot of activity. And one person who thinks the D-backs are one of the most important teams to watch at the deadline is ESPN's Jeff Passan. A chance to catch up with the national baseball writer. What's the last month been like with so many teams that have still been in the race till now?
Mind-boggling and confusing and intriguing and setting us up for a really weird deadline, Mike. Like, I think the intent of the single July 31st trade deadline with no waiver trading in August was to put pressure on teams and almost force them to make buy or sell decisions. And, like, nobody's doing that right now. Because in the National League, I believe 12 out of the 15 teams going into today are on pace for somewhere between 76 and 86 wins. Everybody is in the middle right now, and all it takes, as the San Francisco Giants have shown, is two or three good weeks, and you're right in the thick of the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that that's, I mean, that's obviously bogged down the trade market in both leagues, because everybody has been in the race. But I felt like, just in terms of the tenor of conversations I had, that things started to break this past weekend. Did you notice the same thing, that maybe they're getting closer to at least beginning some resolutions over the next week, and maybe a few teams have made the call to sell that they weren't going to necessarily before?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Cincinnati Reds, the writing is becoming a little clearer. But then it's almost like for every team that says, okay, we're selling, you got a team like the Giants that are jumping right back in it, or in the American League. You know, the A's have been making a really good run in the second half, and the Indians are nipping at the heels of the Twins now, where they may have been just straight-up sellers before that. They may sell and buy right now. There are a lot of fascinating dynamics going on, and the part that makes it, I think, is more problematic than anything is because the free agent class this upcoming offseason is not great, and all of the really good and elite players in that class happen to play for winning teams, you don't have that one big name out there who you're like, this guy is going to be on the move like Manny Machado was last year, Yu Darvish the year before.
Yeah, and most of the rebuilding teams have already traded away their more premium assets, and so you're stuck in this little bit of a bubble. I know you were on television this week talking about the Diamondbacks specifically and why you felt like they might be the linchpin to the 2019-2020 offseason, let alone the deadline. Why do you say that?
They've got a little bit of everything. If you want a pitcher, and an under-control pitcher at that, you can go and get Robbie Ray. If you want a relief pitcher, you can get Greg Holland from the right side, Andrew Chafin from the left side. If you want a bat, there's David Peralta. If you want a backup catcher, there's Alex Avila. If you want a dynamic center fielder who can be a pinch runner, there's Jerod Dyson. I mean, the number of players who are potentially available from the Diamondbacks and their ability to go out and influence different corners of the market is unparalleled in baseball right now. And it's why there are a lot of eyes on the Diamondbacks. You know, they've had a really good year. I think that's a reasonable thing to say. They're a good team. But in this landscape right now, and I appreciate the fact that Mike Hazen said what he did, in this landscape right now, when you're looking at the Dodgers, I understand there's a lot of randomness in baseball, but the idea that a 500 team is going to go out and beat this Dodgers juggernaut, is going to beat an Atlanta Braves team that's strong from top to bottom, and then is going to go and beat the Yankees or the Astros in the World Series. It's a really difficult thing to come to grips with. And with that in mind, you have to be judicious in your decision making, and that's something I think that Mike Hazen does as well as anybody out there.
You know, and the thing is that there is value, even if you lose in the wild card game, to getting to the wild card game, right? You've made the playoffs. The first goal is to get to the postseason, and it gives you a chance to do that. Mike's left open the possibility in the past about buying and selling. How difficult is it to try and do both at this point if you're the Diamondbacks, or is that something that still makes a fair amount of sense for them?
I'll tell you why it's less difficult for the Diamondbacks to do maybe than other organizations, because the Diamondbacks are really judicious in their preparation, and they go into July having looked at both buy and sell scenarios. And it's not just this year. They actually do that every year. That's just part of the organizational process. And I think it's some really good due diligence. I think it prepares them for the offseason as well, because they've had a chance to get eyes on players across the game and throughout the minor leagues. And the nimbleness that they have in the front office is something that's honestly to be admired and emulated.
Jeff, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the next week. Try and get some sleep when you can. And good luck on television tonight with John Schaumbe and David Ross doing the ESPN Game of the Week. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Talk soon.
Jeff talking through a bunch of the names that are going to come up in trade discussions over the next week. It'll be very interesting to see how the D-backs do continue to monitor the trade market. They are just three games out of the wild card spot, but sitting at 500 right now, and a game behind San Francisco for second place. The Giants have now won 17 of 20. All right, the D-backs set to wrap up this homestand. Let's visit with the manager, Torey Lovello.
What happened yesterday?
Yeah, it was a tough game. I felt very good about the game going in, knowing that Merrill's been throwing the ball well. He challenges teams with his secondary stuff. You know, everybody at the big league level can throw the fastball where they want and when they want. But I felt like the breaking ball, changeup, curveball combination would be very efficient against Baltimore Orioles. They're an aggressive team to the fastball. But he made some mistakes in the middle of the zone with his fastball. They made him pay for it. And 7 runs later, we're playing uphill baseball, and we couldn't overcome it.
So you mentioned that guys can generally throw their fastball around. Last night, that didn't seem to be the case with Merrill. What was the feedback? What was the information you got as to why it happened?
Well, things weren't working. That was clear. And, you know, you don't want to take your starter off the mound in the third inning. That's always tough to do, especially somebody like Merrill, who's been throwing the ball really well. It's just, you know, the comments were that he couldn't command the fastball. And it wasn't that he was throwing it off the plate. Sometimes pitchers throw too many strikes. He would try to go away, the ball would land in the middle of the plate. He tried to go in, it would land in the middle of the plate. So, you know, that's what happens sometimes. It's not necessarily that he's yanking out of the zone. He's just pushing balls into the zone, and there's too many mistakes in the middle of the plate.
You know, I would think that, because we talked about this the other day with Alex Young, fairly similar. His was a little different in the way it fell apart for him early. But in September, it's easy to just say, hey, listen, we're going to throw another guy out there. These are games that matter there. How do you have to balance that when you have, you know, twice in three starts, guys that are clearly struggling, you're trying to get through innings, knowing that you have a guy that hasn't pitched well lately going today?
Well, yeah, those pop up as small concerns during the game yesterday. I have to worry about today sometimes, and, you know, it's a challenge in my job. So we just need to get through the day yesterday. That's what we were looking at, and we knew that we had TJ that was fairly rested and Zach Godley that was well rested, and we wanted to get through the game with those two guys and felt like if something happened today, there might be a little carryover between one of those two guys that could give us some innings today. And then fill it in there from the guys that had the complete day off. And knowing that we have tomorrow off, we can kind of rebuild and get strong and be ready for Miami. So we feel very good about where we're at in our bullpen. But it was all based on the fact that TJ came in and did a great job, and Zach Godley did it in a very, very efficient job as well.
Bench got a little stronger today, too. David Peralta activated from the injured list, and he's not in the lineup. But what was the conversation like with David last night?
Well, they've been ongoing for the past several days. He comes in on the days that he's not playing, and he sat down here about 5 or 6 days ago, and we talked about this as a potential strategy and being available off the bench. And we had about 4 or 5 different plans mapped out, and this is the one that fit the best for us. And we wanted to make him available at the earliest time that we possibly could, and when we presented it to him, he felt like this could be something to work. But we had to get through some of these days that he'd been going through in the AZL for the past couple of nights. He felt extremely good. I didn't talk to him last night. I was a little bit crusty after the game. I didn't want to make any phone calls. So I called him first thing this morning. He assured me he's ready to go, and we're super excited.
All right, obviously. And then you lose Oldemaro Vargas for a little while, who goes to AAA to clear the roster spot. Let's talk about today. Mm-hmm. What does Taylor Clark need to do to keep his spot in the rotation?
Well, I mean, there's no mystery that starting pitching is a very big challenge in this game. And, you know, he hasn't thrown the ball as good as we've seen him, and we want him to go out there and string pitches together. And what I mean by that is to maybe sequence pitches the right way, which we do a good job of between he and the catcher. They're going to make sure they're calling the right pitches at the right time and then land those pitches. There's a strategy for that when you set up a pitch or set up a hitter with one pitch in a certain spot to be able to land two more that's going to put him away. So big league pitchers are able to set up the pitch and then land the following pitches to put hitters away or get big outs. We've seen Taylor do that in spurts. We just need it to happen throughout the course of this entire outing.
There's probably no more surprising all-star this year than John Means. What's the key against the changeup artist?
Yeah, well, he's had a tremendous year, and he had a really good outing against the Boston Red Sox in his last outing. So we're ready, and we feel like we handle lefties pretty good. So it's about getting the ball up on the plate, and he's going to work off the edges of the plate. He doesn't really give in, and we have to have that mentality that we're not going to shut down, and we're going to stay stubborn to our plan and get the ball on the plate.
All right, let's give it a good one.
Thanks so much.